Good morning, everybody. Bio 231, summer session, and it is July 9th, Thursday, day after your second exam. And we're going to get into the fundamentals of the nervous system today. That's chapter 12. You see the page numbers right there. And also today after lecture is your second practicum. And when that's done, you're halfway done with the class. So that's pretty amazing that we're moving that fast. Anybody have any questions over the schedule? Don't think so. Pretty straightforward. Okay, I'll put that away. And then we're just going to move into the nervous system. Okay, we've got a bunch of lectures on nervous system, and this first slide over here is going to tell us how we're going to break the nervous system down. It has a bunch of different pieces, a bunch of different components. And here is a diagram that's in your lecture notes. It says nervous system divisions. There is a picture in your textbook that is similar to this, but I like the layout of what I have here on this text slide a little bit better. All right, but maybe you should compare what I have in the lecture notes with the picture that's in your book, and maybe I'll do that as we go along. But the nervous system divisions, this is something that I want you to look at and refer to over the next three or four chapters, right? So it's not anything that you can appreciate today, but at the end of maybe 2 weeks or so, you'll have a pretty good idea of what's going on with the anatomy of the nervous system. Okay, and before we get into the anatomy, I do want to talk a little bit about why we have a nervous system. All right, so the nervous system is the master control and communication center of the body, and it operates very rapidly. We have other communication systems in the body and control centers in the body, but they operate much more slowly and over the long term. So the nervous system is special because it can have an effect on your body very quickly, and then that effect will go away very quickly. So the onset of action is fast, but the duration is for a short period of time, which means then that the nervous system can make other corrections very rapidly. Another important control system in your body is the endocrine system. So it controls your body via hormones that are in the blood. It takes longer for those hormones to have an effect on your body. But the trade-off there is that the hormones will have a longer-lasting effect. So in the long term, hormones are more important. For the short-term regulation and control, the nervous system is more important. And we're going to look at a couple places in the body where you can't really separate the nervous system from the endocrine system. They're integrated together to such a degree. And in those particular cases, then what we're really studying is something we call the neuroendocrine system. So we're just going to start with the plain old nervous system. All right, so the slide on the right shows some important divisions or classifications, breakdown of the nervous system. And let's start with, I see over here, the brain and the spinal cord. The brain and spinal cord make up what division of your nervous system? You knew this probably the first day of class because you had to draw body cavities. Remember, the brain and spinal cord make up the central nervous system. Everything, all other nervous tissue outside the brain and spinal cord is what we call the peripheral nervous system. All right, so the brain and spinal cord is really important because it is the integration center. What is it integrating? It's integrating all kinds of stimuli that are presented to your body, whether it's outside your body or inside your body. It's keeping track of everything that's going on. So let's look at a nice response loop, a nice simple response loop. And here I see a beaker of water, and there is light bouncing off of this beaker of water and is shining into your eyes. So here is light shining into your eyes. You should probably label this right here stimulus. So this response loop always starts with a stimulus. And in order for you to perceive that stimulus, what do we have to have in our bodies? For instance, if you're going to hear anything, what do you need in order to hear something? Can you hear with your eyes? Can you hear with your nose? Can you hear with your tongue? Can you hear with temperature receptors on your skin? You can't. right? So in order to hear something, you have to have auditory receptors. In order to see something, you have to have light receptors or photoreceptors, and that's what we have in our eyes. All right, so the first thing here is a stimulus. The second thing is you have to have a proper receptor. So the eye is a receptor. Receptor then sends that information into the central nervous system. Because your eye is not part of your central nervous system, it's out in the periphery. And the way that that information gets into the central nervous system is that there is a nerve that carries nerve impulses, right, from the periphery into the central nervous system. And this is what we call a sensory neuron. Sensory neuron is partly in the peripheral nervous system and partly in the central nervous system. There is another name for sensory, and that is called afferent. An afferent neuron and a sensory neuron are exactly the same thing. And here we have just one neuron. And can this one neuron send information in two directions or only in one direction? I see one direction because I see one arrow right here, and it's pointing into the central nervous system, right? So that is a sensory neuron or an afferent neuron. The brain then gets information from all over your body, adds it together. That's another way of saying integration. And then it makes sense of all of that information. And maybe it needs to make a decision on what to do in order to protect your body. And the brain can do that. Right, so the integration is done with these neurons in the brain that we call association neurons or interneurons. And this interneuron is the only neuron, the only kind of neuron that is completely contained within the central nervous system. All these other neurons that we're looking at are partly in the peripheral nervous system and partly in the central nervous system. But association neurons are only in the central nervous system. So the brain then sends out directions to the rest of your body. Like, for instance, your brain knows if you're thirsty. Right? And so when your brain realizes, here's a glass of water, then it's going to send information out to the rest of your body to grab that glass of water and to drink it, right? In order to maintain a proper hydration state inside your body. So that information has to leave the central nervous system, right? And that's what we call a motor neuron. A neuron taking information out of the central nervous system to the periphery is a motor neuron, and sometimes we call that an efferent neuron. Afferent is sensory, efferent is motor. And motor is CNS to periphery. Afferent is periphery to CNS, and association is completely within the central nervous system. All right, so where does this motor neuron take information? Well, since you want to drink this glass of water, it has to excite some muscles, in particular skeletal muscle, and it causes that muscle to contract. Right, so this muscle right here is what we call an effector. Right, the eye was a receptor, the skeletal muscle is an effector. An effector is some kind of organ in your body that can produce a response, can change something in your body. Right, so this effector grabs a glass of water, brings it to your mouth so that you can drink a glass of water. So this dotted line, moving up from the glass of water up toward your mouth, this is what we call a response. So here is a nice response loop. The first dotted line, and if you want to put an arrow right here, you can. This first dotted line is what a response loop always starts with, and that is a stimulus. And a response loop always ends with a response, all right, which is the second dotted line over here. All right, so the text slides that you have, sensory input is afferent, right? Then you have integration association neurons, motor output via efferent neurons, and that's basically how our nervous system works. Okay. All right, so the basic structural division. So now this is purely just anatomy here. The two divisions are central nervous system and peripheral nervous system. And we can break the peripheral nervous system down, okay, into a couple divisions. Oh, remember, central nervous system is brain and spinal cord. Peripheral nervous system is everything, all nervous tissue outside the central nervous system. And if we look at this slide, we can see that we can break that peripheral nervous system down into two divisions. We have sensory. What's another name for sensory? Sensory, a sensory neuron is afferent. That's taking signals from the periphery to your central nervous system, sensory or afferent. And the peripheral nervous system also has a division called motor, or what's another name for motor? Efferent, right? And usually we say afferent and efferent, but if I say afferent and efferent in lab, sometimes it's really confusing, right? If you're not listening very carefully, you might get them confused. So I mispronounce those words just a little bit, so it's really obvious, right? So I say afferent and efferent, just so that you know. All right, and don't forget, an efferent neuron takes information away from the central nervous system to the periphery someplace, right, to an effector organ, and that effector organ produces a response. All right, so as a matter of fact, the peripheral nervous system we can break down into two divisions. We can break the efferent division down into two subdivisions as well. Right? The two divisions are somatic and autonomic. And somatic means to the someplace on the surface of your body, or someplace that's not deep inside a body cavity, someplace other than deep inside a body cavity. Like, for instance, places where you have bones and you have skeletal muscle. Right? And so that's what we call the somatic part of your body. And those muscles are skeletal muscles. And those skeletal muscles are under voluntary control. So a lot of times we might want to use this word somatic in the same connotation as voluntary, right? But it also has sort of an anatomic definition as well. It just means superficial, not in a body cavity. So we have the somatic nervous system, right, and the autonomic. And you could probably call it the automatic nervous system, but nobody ever does. We call it the autonomic nervous system. And that controls parts of your body involuntarily. Your central nervous system controls, and maybe even endocrine system controls, most things in your body, okay, automatically via the autonomic nervous system, things you don't have to think about. Like, you don't have to think about blood pressure. You don't have to think about your body temperature, okay, or hormone levels or things like that. Another way of thinking of the autonomic nervous system, right, instead of somatic, we might want to say visceral. So sometimes somatic and visceral kind of match up really nice as being opposite terms, but visceral means something that's inside a deep body cavity, like the thoracic cavity, like the abdominal cavity, like the pelvic cavity. Okay, so that's where the autonomic nervous system goes. That's a good way to think about it. All right, and just like we can break the motor divisions down into two, we can break the autonomic nervous system down into two. All right, and there's something probably that you should appreciate right now, and that is when we look at muscles and we consider the biceps brachii, right, and we learn some actions and the origins and insertion, but there was some other information about that biceps brachii that you found very important. And as a matter of fact, it was on the lecture test, right? And what else would you want to associate with that biceps brachii if you want to really understand how position and motion is controlled in your body? What else could you think? What else kind of resonates in your mind when you think of biceps brachii in terms of control? Okay. Yeah, it's voluntary. And that's what's controlling your body, your voluntary thoughts. Okay, but what gives the position of your forearm, what maintains that precise control and balance of your forearm? It's not just the biceps brachii. It is also, okay, it's the principle of antagonism. It's also the triceps brachii, right? And those two muscles are antagonistic to each other, and the musculoskeletal system is built and based upon that principle of antagonism, so you have precise control and balance of where your body is going. So antagonism is really important. Two divisions, right? Biceps brachii, triceps brachii. The autonomic nervous system has to have the same kind of architecture. The autonomic nervous system has two divisions. You have the sympathetic and parasympathetic, and you could probably take a pretty wild guess. What's the relationship between sympathetic and parasympathetic divisions of the autonomic nervous system? You should think of these as like the biceps brachii and triceps brachii. These two divisions are going to be antagonistic to each other, so that all these things that you don't have voluntary control of, right, are still maintained precisely and with balance, so that it's easy to maintain living states inside your body. So if the sympathetic nervous system is excitatory, let's pick an organ on the heart, for instance. If the heart receives sympathetic information, it will speed the heart up. But if the heart receives parasympathetic information, it will slow the heart down. Okay, and we'll learn what some of these relationships are. Okay, when we get into the autonomic nervous system, that's a couple chapters away. All right, so if we look at this response loop over here, we saw the stimulus, receptor, afferent neuron, right, integration center, efferent neuron to this muscle right here, which is an effector organ. An effector organ always produces some kind of response. All right, so what kind of nervous system are we looking at right here, this efferent neuron going to a skeletal muscle? Is it somatic or autonomic? Okay, it's going to a skeletal muscle, which is what? Voluntary control. So this is part of the somatic nervous system. So the effectors, right, so maybe right under here under voluntary, it actually says, but you might want to put it down. The effectors for the somatic nervous system are skeletal muscles. Skeletal muscle, that's voluntary. Okay. The motor neurons for the autonomic nervous system don't go to skeletal muscle. Here are the effector organs for the autonomic nervous system. It is smooth muscle, right, because you don't have voluntary control of that. That's under autonomic control. Cardiac muscle, which is under autonomic control, not somatic, and also glands. So these are the three kinds of effector organs of the autonomic nervous system. So go ahead and remember that. What's the effector organ for the somatic nervous system? I see it on the slide over here. It is skeletal muscle, only skeletal muscle. What are some effector organs of the autonomic nervous system? Cardiac muscle, smooth muscle, and glands in your body, right? And none of those things you have voluntary control over. And as a matter of fact, the only thing you do have voluntary control over in your whole body is skeletal muscle. That's the only thing. Everything else is controlled by the autonomic nervous system and also the endocrine system and maybe some other signaling compounds. All right, so it's going to take a couple weeks to really appreciate this flow diagram, but when we talk about these things, all right, I want you to refer to this diagram and just kind of put it in the proper place in this diagram. Okay, so here is a pretty nice picture that shows the different main divisions of the nervous system. I see the brain and the spinal cord, right? Brain inside the cranium, protected by the cranial bones. Spinal cord protected by the vertebrae. Those two things make up the central nervous system. Every other nervous tissue that's outside the brain and spinal cord is what we call the peripheral nervous system. In the peripheral nervous system, we just say that these are nerves. Okay? In the brain and spinal cord, we don't have nerves per se, but we have big, long tracts of nervous system cells that carry information. So in the brain, we have tracts. In the peripheral nervous system, we call these things nerves. All right, so brain and spinal cord has tracts. Peripheral nervous system has nerves to carry that information. Okay, there's another term right here. Nucleus and ganglia. We're going to come back to that because that has something to do with the type of cells that make up the nervous system. And we're going to take a look at that right now. Okay, information processing. So you have sensory, input, right, travels from some point of somatic reception, which is not inside a deep body cavity, someplace on the surface, right? Or it could be a point of visceral reception, and it brings it into the central nervous system, right? If it's visceral, that would be autonomic, right? And then the integration center, the central nervous system, adds all that information up, makes a decision, and then it sends out a response via the efferent motor neurons. This carries signal from central nervous system to peripheral nervous system to somatic motor. What's the effect of the somatic motor nervous system? Somatic motor is going to be skeletal muscle and only skeletal muscle. You're right. Okay? And or it could send information out, right, efferent signals to the visceral motor effectors. What are some visceral motor effectors? And motor effectors are sort of like an oxymoron. They mean the same thing. What's a visceral motor effector? Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, glands. Okay, that should be on the tip of your tongue. All right, so what makes up these cells, or the cells of the nervous system? We got two main kinds. And these nerve cells basically are non-dividing, and we call these things neurons. That's the first kind of cell. So let me find a neuron, a basic shape of a neuron. Oh, I see it right here. Okay, let's take a look at it. So here is a basic kind of neuron, a fundamental shape of a neuron, and I see two main colors. I see like a gold color. Is that gold or yellow? Give me a hint. What color is that? Green? Yellow. Okay, I see a yellow color, right? And it goes and it has a bunch of branches over here and then a central region and then another long process that's coming out the other end, right? That's all part of the same cell. That is what we call a neuron. We're going to look at some pieces of this neuron. I see some other cells that have kind of a gray color to them. These are what we call Schwann cells. They don't carry electrical information. These are support cells. These are cells of the nervous system, but they are not neurons. So those are the two main classes. You have neurons in the nervous system that can receive signals and transmit electrical impulses. And then you have these support cells that help the neurons do their job. And these support cells, sometimes we call neuroglia, or neuroglial cells, right? And they don't transmit electrical information, they just help the neurons do their job. All right, so let's pay attention to the neuron first. This main region of the neuron contains the nucleus, and I can see some rough endoplasmic reticulum and some mitochondria. As a matter of fact, a lot of mitochondria, because this is a very active cell. Neurons are some of the most metabolically active cells in your body, right? And so these mitochondria need oxygen to make ATP. And as a matter of fact, I think we talked about how metabolically active this neuron is because if we cut off oxygen to your brain, how long can these cells operate for before they stop functioning? About 2 or 3 seconds. That's it, okay? So they use up all of their ATP. And then 2 to 3 minutes, the cell will actually die. And sometime, in some period of time in between those few seconds and few minutes, right, these neurons can be revived if you give them oxygen. All right, so this is what we call the nucleus. All of these organelles right here are contained in the cell body, right? That's the biosynthetic center. And it's the receiving end of this neuron. Right, and we say somatic, and just like what we were talking about before, somatic sort of means body. Right, it just means body. So here is the body, the cell body of a neuron. I see a bunch of smaller processes coming off the body, and these are highly branched. These things right here are what we call dendrites. This is the receiving end of a neuron. You could think of these little dendrites right here as being like an antenna on your TV set or radio. Has anybody ever seen an antenna on a radio or a TV set? Anybody have any idea what I'm talking about? Yes. Okay, they used to be really popular before cable, right? Okay. And so that's the receiving end. It's receiving information. right? That information then flows down the dendrites into the cell body, and then I see a little funnel right here. All that information arrives at this funnel, and it is funneled into this one long process. This one long process right here is the third division of a neuron. We call that an axon. And an axon is not a receiving part of a neuron, it's the sending part. It's sending that information that has been received down to this axon terminus, or the end of an axon. So this is where we find nerve impulses. And nerve impulses can go from the cell body down to the axon terminus. And what about the reverse direction? Can it go from the axon terminus back up to the cell body? And this slide here shows you, can answer that for you. Because I see an arrow. And what can you tell me about that arrow? Which way is it pointing? It's pointing to the axon terminus. And notice, it's only a unidirectional arrow. It's not bidirectional, so impulses can only go from cell body to the axon terminus. So every neuron can send information only in one direction. So if you want efferent and afferent function, you need to have two different neurons doing that. Okay? All right, so that is an axon. This special part of the axon, this very beginning of the axon that kind of looks like a funnel, we call that the axon hillock. That's a very special place, right? It kind of funnels and integrates information up from all of these dendrites and cell body. And this little section right here can even make a decision on what to do with that information. The axon hillock. So that's why this is so important. Okay, the axon terminals over here, we kind of looked at this in terms of neuromuscular junction. These axon terminals contain chemicals called neurotransmitters and vesicles. When a nerve impulse reaches the axon terminus, it will cause the release of that neurotransmitter into the extracellular space so that neighboring neurons, okay, can receive that signal from this neuron. Okay. All right, so the support cells. This is what we call a Schwann cell. And it kind of looks like a pearl, a string of pearls wrapped around this axon. And the job of these Schwann cells is to increase the speed of a nerve impulse. Without these Schwann cells, the nerve impulse might move down an axon probably maximum of about 5 miles an hour. Right? But if it has these Schwann cells on it, then it can be hundreds of miles an hour. The speed changes very quickly. Right? The Schwann cell produces a compound called myelin. So myelin is a lipid, it's an insulator, and it just keeps the electrical signal inside the axon, and the nerve impulse actually skips from one of these spaces between the Schwann cells to the next, to the next, to the next. So instead of flowing through an axon, it actually skips down the axon. These spaces between the Schwann cells are what we call nodes of Ranvier, nodes of Ranvier. Without these nodes of Ranvier, the nerve impulse can't travel down the axon. We're going to look at the Schwann cell in a little bit more detail, but this slide right here shows us a neuron, which is really nice. The three divisions are dendrites, cell body, axon. Dendrite cell body is the receiving end of this neuron. The axon is the sending end of this neuron. Okay, so we got cell body, axon, dendrites, functions, they do not divide, high metabolic rate, fortunately they live for a long period of time, ability to conduct electrical impulses. Yeah, we covered all of that. Okay, so stimulus, right, can affect the dendrite. That dendrite then sends information to the cell body. Cell body can even receive information, and then all that information is sent to an axon to travel down an axon. So this is the basic configuration of a neuron. But in different parts of our nervous system, we do have different types. Right? We have looked at some afferent and efferent neurons. And let's see where I can find some of these different types. of neurons. All right. So here I see three major types of neurons. The first one that we were looking at with a whole bunch of short dendrites, one large cell body, and then a really long axon, this is what we call a multipolar neuron. Multipolar neuron is important because this is how all motor neurons look. They take this particular kind of form. Right? And also, some sensory neurons are like this. Right? But probably the best thing to think of is that this multipolar neuron can be an association neuron or a motor neuron. The next kind is a bipolar. Here is the cell body of a bipolar. And there are two long projections, not just one. One is an axon, one is a dendrite. Right? They look kind of similar in structure, but this name tells a story. Right? This dendrite, right over here, this really long dendrite. Which way are signals moving through this dendrite? We can go back to that previous slide. Remember where was an arrow? Arrow was right here, and it was always pointing to the axon terminus, right? So signals always go dendrite, cell body, axon. The same thing for this bipolar cell. Signals go from dendrite to cell body to axon. So this dendrite, right, is still the receiving end of this bipolar neuron, right? And then the sending part is the axon over here, and there's going to be neurotransmitter released at the axon terminus. At the ends of a dendrite, you have receptors to receive information. Right? And these bipolar cells are not very numerous in your body, but they're in a few really important locations. Some special sense organs, like for smell and for hearing and for vision. So you don't have receptors for that information all over your body, just in a couple places, but those couple places do need these bipolar cells. So bipolar, you should maybe think of as being related to the sensory motor system. What's another name for sensory? Sensory starts with an A. Afferent, yeah. So bipolar neurons are afferent neurons. They're important for receiving stimuli. And here's another one that's similar. It's called a unipolar, sometimes a pseudo-unipolar. Here is the cell body, and I don't see any dendrites coming off the cell body right here, but I see one process or one projection, and then it splits into two, right? And so it's really what, a unipolar neuron, but since it splits right away, sometimes we call it a pseudo-unipolar neuron, and I'm fine if you call it a unipolar neuron. You don't have to say pseudo. The function of this type of neuron is always going to be sensory. Right. So a motor neuron is always going to be multipolar. A sensory neuron is always going to be a unipolar neuron. And again, here we see one big long axon. And let's look down on this slide over here. So I see three different colors on this slide. Do I see three different colors? Sort of. Okay. Maybe there's a chart even that tells what color. Oh, look at this. It has three different colors right here, huh? Okay, receptive region, conducting region, secretory region. Okay, so receptive region, that's the receiving end. Conducting is, right, the sending end. And then the axon terminus, right, I guess we're going to call that the secretory region, because what is it secreting? What do all these little dots here represent? And all these little dots here. And all these little dots here. That represents neurotransmitter being released from this neuron. Okay, so for this unipolar neuron, we're going to see that this process that is on the receiving end of this neuron is going to be called the peripheral process, and this one over here is going to be called the central process. This is called the central process because you find it in the central nervous system, and this process over here is called the peripheral process because you find that in the peripheral nervous system. Right? And it's not because this process is centrally located, It's just that's where it is located, in the central nervous system, this one over here in the peripheral nervous system. So those are the three different kinds of neurons by shape and also by function. So make sure you can identify these cells, tell me their name by their particular shape, but you should also know what their function is, like motor, sensory, for instance. And also this multipolar neuron is an interneuron, which is neither motor nor sensory, right? It's like right smack in the middle. Okay, so those are the kinds of neurons. And the second kind of neuron, we got some better slides of these other kinds of nervous system cells, right? Sometimes we call these neuroglia cells or support cells. Let's go way back up over here. Okay. So here I see a neuron, probably has that nice color, nice yellow color to it. And these kinds of support cells, the following ones that I'm going to talk about, are found only in the central nervous system, not in the peripheral nervous system. And this one, it's a nervous system cell, it's part of the nervous tissue, but it's not a neuron because it can't transmit electrical impulses. But I see that it has a bunch of projections, right? Some of the projections go to a blood vessel. Here's a capillary, that's a special kind of blood vessel that can allow for exchange between what's in the blood and this extracellular space. All right, so an astrocyte has a process around a capillary, and that same cell can also have an attachment to this neuron. And so one job of the astrocyte is that it is a door-to-door delivery system. It can take compounds that this neuron needs directly from the blood and deliver it to this neuron. Some of these things might be, for instance, like glucose, an important energy metabolite. Astrocytes can also help this neuron do its job by recycling neurotransmitters. And this astrocyte over here, right, can also monitor activity within the brain. And remember we said that these neurons don't regenerate, right? But this astrocyte right here can secrete a compound that can make this neuron grow and form more processes so that it has better communication with cells, neighboring cells around it. And without that trophic factor, this neuron is going to degenerate, as a matter of fact. Okay, and there's some parts of the brain that are more sensitive to degeneration than others, and that's really important because we're understanding a lot of important function of an astrocyte in terms of things like affective disorders, like depression, right? If the activity of these astrocytes is decreased, these neurons start to degrade or degenerate, and that produces a clinical depression. All right, so that's the job of an astrocyte. Okay, there's something else too. So here is that capillary. And you see in this region, I can't see the capillary because it's completely surrounded by these processes from an astrocyte. All right, and this is what we call the blood-brain barrier, right? Because here's your brain, we're talking about central nervous system, here's blood, here's a barrier between them, and that's really important because these neurons, remember, are highly metabolic, they're active all the time, and if they're damaged in any way, right, then your brain loses function and you could die as a result of that. So this blood-brain barrier prevents many toxic compounds that are in the blood from entering the brain, and that protects the brain. So blood-brain barrier is very, very important. Some drugs cannot move through the blood-brain barrier by themselves, and then a lot of experiments have to be done how to modify that particular drug so that it can go across the blood-brain barrier but still maintain its efficacy. So this blood-brain barrier usually is a good thing. It prevents toxins in our blood from entering the brain, which would have an immediate effect and maybe a deadly effect. All right, so astrocyte. And this was called an astrocyte because somebody thought, you know, this reminded them of a star up in the sky with a bunch of light rays emanating from that star. So astrocyte has a number of pretty important functions. All right, the next kind of neuroglial cell is what we call a microglia cell, or microglial cell. I can see some neurons. The microglial cell doesn't transmit electrical impulses, but its job is for immune response. This thing kind of acts like a Langerhans cell that you found in your skin. We looked at that. So if there are foreign substances in your brain, hopefully this microglial cell will bump into it, recognize it as being different from your body, and then try to kill it. It can even, under good circumstances, right, recognize tumors in your body, maybe even cancer cells. And what's really nice then is that this microglial cell will kill all of those cancer cells. So that's one way to maybe appreciate and understand or explain spontaneous recovery from brain cancer. Somehow these microglial cells learn to detect the tumor cells and kill them. All right, so immune response for microglial cells. Another kind, we got four of these. The third kind, okay, are what we call ependymal cells. These look kind of funny. All right, so here is the brain, and then here is a cavity deep inside the brain that's filled with fluid. And these cavities inside the brain are called ventricles. When we get to the central nervous system, you'll become aware of some ventricles. This fluid is called cerebrospinal fluid. It's found in the cerebrum as well as the spinal cord. And the ependymal cells have a couple functions. It acts as protection, a barrier between cerebrospinal fluid and the brain. Because sometimes you can have an infection of the cerebrospinal fluid and you don't want that infection having direct access to your brain. That helps protect your brain, so it acts like another barrier. These ependymal cells maintain the proper concentration of chemicals within the cerebrospinal fluid, the proper concentration of glucose and sodiums and potassiums, which is different than the extracellular space. Okay. And so the other function of these ependymal cells is actually to produce the fluid that fills these different chambers inside the brain. Ependymal cells make cerebrospinal fluid with the help of a blood vessel. The blood vessel is not shown on this slide, okay? But they are associated with each other in a couple important places in the brain. You're going to see that those places are called a choroid plexus. The choroid plexus is the part of these regions where we have these ependymal cells with capillaries that can synthesize and secrete cerebrospinal fluid. It says right here. All right, so look at this word, cerebrospinal. It is not cerebral, A-L, spinal fluid, right, because we're taking cerebrum and spinal cord together, right, and just we put an O between them, cerebrospinal fluid. Who wants to get that? I don't want to take it. Okay. All right, so that's the third kind. The fourth kind that we're going to be looking at, okay, is called an oligodendrocyte. Here I see the cell body, a couple processes. These processes reach over and associate themselves with an axon. And this one oligodendrocyte is associating with how many different axons that you see right here? How many axons do you see? I see one, I see two, I see three. All right, so this oligodendrocyte has the ability to act like a Schwann cell, but in the central nervous system. It can put down a myelin sheath around this axon, and can anybody remember what happens to this axon? What is the specialization? What is the advantage of having an axon with a myelin sheath around it? It can transmit electrical impulses almost hundreds of times faster compared to if this myelin sheath was not there. So nerve impulse conduction is speeded up. That's the job of this oligodendrocyte. And you should also know, where do we have this oligodendrocyte? What part of your nervous system? Your brain, right, and spinal cord, central nervous system, but not in the peripheral nervous system. Peripheral nervous system axons can transmit impulses very rapidly because they have another kind of cell, not an oligodendrocyte, but a Schwann cell, right, with those nodes of Ron VA. So So even there are nodes between these oligodendrocytes in the central nervous system. Okay, so here is something sort of interesting. The astrocyte produces compounds that can cause the growth of neurons, right? So that's excitatory. The oligodendrocyte secretes compounds that can attenuate or reduce or even prevent the growth of neurons. What does that sound like to you? A good thing or a bad thing? One kind of neuroglia can excite, the other can inhibit. What does that sort of sound like to you again, in terms of the musculoskeletal system? It almost looks like biceps brachii, triceps brachii. So there's got to be a balance between these two different kinds of cells, okay, that maintain the central nervous system. And as a matter of fact, when you take a class like this, those astrocytes get really, really busy. And they secrete a lot of trophic factors. And one way that we can understand learning is that when you learn something, neurons in your brain make more connections. All right, so the structure of your brain is actually changing when you learn something. And that also means that the structure of your brain at the end of this class is going to be a lot different than it was before this class. So that's actually pretty amazing. And it's actually kind of a scary thought that you guys are handing your brains over to me so that I can rebuild them for you. Right? That's actually really scary. So be careful of the people that you kind of hang out with, because your brain kind of remodels itself, right, to understand and appreciate that stimulus that's around you. All right, so oligodendrocytes, we'll look at this in particular. Right, oligodendrocytes inhibit regeneration. Astrocytes, on the other hand, promote regeneration. All right, the other kinds of neuroglia cells. That's it for central nervous system. Let's go to peripheral nervous system. Here is a sensory neuron. This is what we call that unipolar neuron. Here's the cell body that's in the peripheral nervous system. And let's just say this is the axon terminus. This is inside the central nervous system, this region over here. So from here all the way over to here is peripheral nervous system. I can see these Schwann cells wrapping myelin sheets around this axon that speeds the conduction of a nerve impulse. That's the job, right? So that's a support cell. A Schwann cell doesn't transmit electrical information. It just helps the neuron do its job. And then remember, these spaces are what we call nodes of Ranvier. And through that node of Ranvier, we can actually see this little axon, right, going through like this string of pearls. The second kind of support cell that we find in the peripheral nervous system are cells, support cells that surround this neuron cell body of a unipolar neuron. Since they surround it, sometimes these are called satellite cells. Because remember, when you look at a cell underneath a microscope, the nucleus picks up a lot of stain, right? So it's really easy to observe. Sometimes the cytoplasm is harder to see. So when they were first looking at neurons, they would see all these dark dots surrounding the cell body of a neuron, right? And a lot of times people that use microscopes were the same people that use telescopes. And when you use a telescope, right, then you would have the idea, well, here is the sun, and then surrounding the sun would be planets. Or if you're looking at a planet, and Jupiter is really easy to see, say you're looking at a planet like Jupiter, you'd see things surrounding Jupiter, and those things were moving around all the time. So it was kind of fun to look at. And the motion of those little dots around Jupiter, people could actually navigate and figure out where they were. And so what were those dots that move around the planet Jupiter? Four of them are really easy to see. Earth only has one. And the one on Earth is really easy to see because it's so close. Yeah, those are the moons of Jupiter, four moons of Jupiter. Right, so those moons are satellites, so these are what are called satellite cells. They maintain the health of the cell body of this unipolar neuron. Okay, now, what's the function? Oh, here's a little quiz. What's the function of this unipolar neuron? The unipolar neuron is 100% of the time sensory, and another name for sensory is afferent. So here is an afferent neuron. Afferent neuron receives information and sends it into the central nervous system. All right, so those are the two kinds of support cells in the peripheral nervous system. We talked about that myelin sheath. Let me see if we've got a fancy slide of a myelin sheath anywhere. Oh yeah, we do. We do. Okay, it was the very next slide. All right, so here is an axon. Here's a Schwann cell as it's growing. Here's the nucleus. Here's a bunch of cytoplasm. Right, so this is all the living material in a Schwann cell. And as it grows, right, this end of a Schwann cell starts to wrap itself around the axon. Those inner wrappings contain myelin, which is a lipid. Right, and so that's an insulator. You could think of that almost as if when you plug your toaster in, right? Anybody ever plug a toaster in or a mixer or something in your kitchen? Do you have to worry about getting an electrical shock? And why or why not? Maybe some of you have. But generally speaking, do you get an electrical shock when you plug an appliance in to a socket in your house? Or when you plug, got my fingers crossed, when you plug the microscope into a socket in lab, did you get an electrical shock? And you know why? Because there is rubber or plastic over the wires, right? So that electricity can't leave the wire and enter your body. We call that insulation. Myelin does pretty much the same thing. It acts as insulation around this axon, and it prevents the leakage of electricity from the axon. All right, so the Schwann cell is getting busy. It doesn't wrap itself around one time, but multiple times. So I can see multiple layers of myelin, right, produced by this Schwann cell. So it's a lot of insulation. And the very last wrapping is where all that cytoplasm gets pushed to. Right, the inner layers are myelin. As the cell wraps around the axon, the cytoplasm gets pushed to the outside. So the living part of the Schwann cell is right on the outside, this outermost ring. And sometimes that's what we call the neurilemma. The neurilemma is the part of the Schwann cell that contains cytoplasm, and it just so happens that's always the most superficial part of this little nodule right here that we call a Schwann cell. All right, can anybody remember what's on the end of this Schwann cell over here? If you look at this region, you can actually find an axon. That's called the node of Ranvier, node of Ranvier, in between Schwann cells. All right, so neurilemma, we've got a pretty nice model in lab, right, that you'll be able to see the neurilemma and some other connective tissues that surround this axon. Okay, let me look at one other thing here. All right, so I want to go back to this particular slide. All right, so here I see a bunch of Schwann cells on this axon. So where is this axon located? Central nervous system or peripheral nervous system? Here I see Schwann cells. Schwann cells are found only in the peripheral nervous system, not central nervous system, right? What kind of myelinating cell do we have in the central nervous system? It's called an oligodendrocyte, right? So there's a similar kind of function, but two different kinds of cells, and actually in some cases the function is exactly opposite, like in terms of regeneration. Okay, so an electrical impulse will skip from one node of Ranvier to the next, to the next, to the next. When a nerve impulse moves very rapidly by skipping, we call that saltatory conduction. Where is saltatory? Here, saltatory conduction. That's how you spell it. Saltatory conduction, that's when a nerve impulse skips down an axon. Now, you might want to think of, well, why is skipping faster? Could you think of an example? You know what we should do? All of us should get up and run down the stairs, and I should time everybody. But you have to do it twice. The first time, when you run down the stairs, you got to step on every single stair, right? Boom, 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 all this, I don't know how many stairs there are there, maybe 30 stairs, time you how long it takes you to do that. And then the second time, I would let you skip stairs, like every other or every third step, right, and run down. Which way do you think would be faster, skipping steps or stepping on every single one? Yeah, skipping would be faster. At least that's my hypothesis. I've never made a class do that, but maybe next time. We can do that, or if we have volunteers after class. Okay, and if an axon is not myelinated, I don't see any Schwann cells or oligodendrocytes, the nerve impulse travels much more slowly. just a handful of miles an hour as compared to hundreds of miles an hour if it's saltatory conduction. Right? If it's a slow form of conduction because it's a non-myelinated axon, we call that continuous conduction. So continuous conduction is relatively slow. It happens on non-myelinated axons. So you can see that this myelin sheath, right, controls the activity and the speed of information processing in the brain. And when it degenerates, right, that produces a condition called multiple sclerosis. Right, so multiple sclerosis is when there's degeneration of these oligodendrocytes in the central nervous system. And that just destroys the function of those axons and the timing of processing of information in the brain. Anybody ever hear of multiple sclerosis, MS? Anybody know somebody with multiple sclerosis? Yeah. Fortunately, most kinds today can be controlled fairly effectively. It's not necessarily fatal anymore, completely debilitating. And there are a number of celebrities that have multiple sclerosis, and they're still really nice and functional. So it is really scary if you get that condition. Who's a celebrity that has it? Gosh, I'm forgetting. One celebrity has it. It will come to me right at the end of the lecture. Or I'll wake up in the morning and I'll write it down. Okay, I can picture him, but I can't remember his name. Okay, got to get those astrocytes working. Okay, a synapse. Let's go back and review a little bit. What's the structural and functional unit of life called? A cell, yeah. So if you know how one cell works, you pretty much know how all of life happens. What's the structural and functional unit of contraction? The sarcomere. Yeah, if you know how one sarcomere works, you pretty much know how they all work in cardiac muscle, skeletal muscle, right, because they have sarcomeres. Let's see, what about the structural and functional unit of compact bone? What do we call that? I heard it. Somebody said it, not real loud. It's an osteon, right? All the little lamellae, concentric lamellae, the lacunae, the osteocytes and the lacunae and the canaliculi between the lacunae. So if you know how one osteon is put together, you pretty much know everything about compact bone. Well, here's something that's really handy too. It's called the synapse. And the synapse is the structural and functional unit of communication between cells. Right? And we're going to specifically look at neurons, but it could be other cells as well. It could be communication between a neuron and a muscle cell, which we looked at maybe the last time or time before. That was called the neuromuscular junction. Neuromuscular junction is just a special case of a synapse. All right, so let's look at a synapse to see how cells can communicate with each other. Let's look at this particular slide right here. All right, let's focus on the left-hand part of this slide. It's a little small. All right, when I look at this illustration over here, I actually see two neurons, and I want you to be able to visualize that. All right, here's the first one, kind of down on the bottom row. I can see a bunch of dendrites. I can see a cell body and an axon. Now, where is that other neuron? Here it is right here. All right, so here is an axon coming from a neuron, which would be drawn up over here, but we only see the axon. This axon comes down and gets really close to this second neuron, doesn't touch it, right? But there's still always a space between these two neurons that we call a synapse. All right, so this axon on top sometimes is called the presynaptic neuron, and the one underneath it right here is the, take a guess, postsynaptic neuron. And notice, the postsynaptic neuron is being almost touched by the presynaptic on what regions? What region is being associated with the presynaptic neuron? What are these things right here? Yeah, dendrites. Look where that connection is. It's on a dendrite. And what was the function of a dendrite? Generally speaking, it is the receiving end, right? So here is a nice multipolar neuron. The receiving end is being associated with the what? The sending end of another neuron. So this top neuron, or the presynaptic, is the sending part of this unit, and the postsynaptic neuron, especially these dendrites right here, are the receiving end of that particular synapse. So let's zoom in to this area. Does everybody see two neurons right here and where they're connecting up? Here's the presynaptic, here's the postsynaptic. And the synapse, or the junction between them, is right here. So let's zoom in. All right, so here's the presynaptic axon, or axon of that neuron. Here is the postsynaptic neuron. And where do these things associate? Right at the dendrite on the postsynaptic cell. And notice there's a space between these neurons. They don't come in contact with each other. This kind of synapse is what we call a chemical synapse, because the way information moves across this gap, which we call the synaptic cleft, there's a gap between the cells called the synaptic cleft, information travels as a chemical signal. And I can see these chemicals right here. And I think everybody has heard of what's a general name for these chemicals that are being secreted by the presynaptic neuron that can be observed by the postsynaptic neuron. What's a general name for these chemicals right here? Okay. What kind of cell is this presynaptic cell right here? Is it like a fibroblast? Is it a muscle cell? Is it a blood cell? What kind of cell is this right here? It's a neuron. All right, so here's a neuron. So this chemical, right, is what we call a neurotransmitter. Neuro because this is a neuron, and what is that chemical doing? It's transmitting information. So the general name for these chemicals released by the presynaptic cell is called a neurotransmitter. I can see vesicles, a whole bunch of vesicles in the axon terminus of the presynaptic neuron. That's why there's a little swelling right here. It also contains a lot of mitochondria. So what can you tell me, what do you think about the metabolic activity of this swelling at the end of an axon? Very little metabolic activity or a lot? Has a lot of mitochondria, right? So this terminal right here needs a lot of ATP. So highly metabolic. Okay, so here is neurotransmitter. A couple specific names of neurotransmitters we're going to look at in this particular class. I mentioned acetylcholine as one of them that's used at all neuromuscular junctions and used in many, many synapses in your brain. Okay, and even in your peripheral nervous system, acetylcholine is just a specific name of a neurotransmitter. And when a nerve impulse comes down the axon from the cell body to this axon terminus, that causes these vesicles to move over to the presynaptic membrane, fuse to the presynaptic membrane, and then all these neurotransmitters are released into the synaptic cleft. And they move from an area of high concentration near the presynaptic membrane to the postsynaptic membrane by diffusion, right? Just like if I open up a perfume bottle here, first the people in the front row would smell it, and then eventually all the way in the back, and that perfume would move based on concentration. It always moves from high to low concentration. Same thing for these neurotransmitters. And when a neurotransmitter bumps into this postsynaptic membrane, this postsynaptic cell can detect that neurotransmitter if the postsynaptic cell has what? What does the postsynaptic cell have to have in order to detect these neurotransmitters? What do you have to have in order to detect light? What do you have to have in order to detect sound? What do you have to have in order to detect pressure? Yeah, a receptor of some kind, right? So this postsynaptic cell has to have a receptor that can bind the neurotransmitter, right? So the postsynaptic cell has to have a receptor, has to be receptive to this particular neurotransmitter. If it doesn't have a receptor, it's going to be completely blind and ignore that signal. Okay, so this is how information goes. On the presynaptic axon, it's an electrical signal. Across the synapse, it's converted into a chemical signal. When the neurotransmitter binds to receptor in the postsynaptic cell, it's converted back to an electrical signal. So how does information go through this chemical synapse? It goes electrical, chemical, electrical, right? And then that electrical signal might move down all the way down to the end of the postsynaptic neurons, axon. All right, so here is a synapse. That's a general kind of a synapse. We call it chemical synapse. This swelling right here sometimes is called, in the axon terminus, is called a synaptic button, maybe a synaptic knob, maybe a terminal button, maybe a bouton terminale. I don't know what language that is. Sounds Italian or something, maybe French. Bouton terminale. It is just what? The end of an axon that contains all of these vesicles with neurotransmitter in them. One important kind of neurotransmitter is acetylcholine. Okay. Let me see what else. Okay, there's some language here that you don't have to know for this class. Okay, so I'm not going to, I'll look at your study guide, make sure that I'm not missing something. Okay, but I'm using terms like here, like depolarization, maybe there's something here called repolarization. I have some chemical compounds like CA. You don't have to know chemistry for this class. Okay, but CA stands for calcium, and I see there's a little positive sign right here. This is a calcium ion. Because of that positive charge, it has electrical properties. We call that an electrolyte. Another kind of electrolyte in our body is sodium. This Na stands for sodium. The little positive charge right here means it has electrical properties. There are other kinds of electrolytes in our body. Magnesium and potassium, they're not on this particular slide, but those are what we call electrolytes. And they're really important because they maintain the proper electrical balance inside your body. So the proper concentrations are hugely important. As a matter of fact, you might be working in an emergency room sometime, and somebody's going to yell out to you, we need some lights on this patient stat. What the heck does that mean? We need some lights on this patient. What are you going to do? Run around, look for some big lights, and shine it on the patient? Okay, that would be one thing you could do, but that's not what they're talking about. Right, what they're talking about are electrolytes, like sodium and potassium, these things that have electrical charges on them. Right, so they want you to take a blood sample, run it down to the lab, or maybe analyze it right there in the room, and let everybody know if there's a proper concentration of sodium and calcium, magnesium, chloride, and other kinds of electrolytes in that person. And if they're wrong, then they have to be dosed with the proper concentrations to get them back to normal. Okay, so what else? What is on the slide? ACH. You should probably know that. ACH is what? Acetylcholine. I probably have it written out someplace. Right, acetylcholine is a special kind of neurotransmitter. And anybody know a name of another kind of neurotransmitter? Just so that we can get over acetylcholine as being something really far out and special. It sort of is. But what's another kind of neurotransmitter? Anybody know a name of another one? Okay, did I hear serotonin? Yeah, serotonin is one. Okay, serotonin, epinephrine, norepinephrine are some. Okay, another important kind. Epinephrine, norepinephrine, acetylcholine, serotonin, dopamine. Those are all specific kinds of neurotransmitters that are released, right, at a synapse to carry information across the synapse. Okay, the sign-in sheet is going around. And we just got a couple more things to look at in this chapter. And then next time, gosh, what are we going to do next time? Central nervous system? Next time is central nervous system. What's central nervous system? Brain and spinal cord. Okay, so these can be really fun parts of the class, but you still have to look it over. You still have to study this part.